Welcome to 3DBPM's Pulse Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most advanced, fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing technologies with the people that make them happen. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of 3DBPM, the leading media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-changing world of AM. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the 3DBPM Pulse Podcast. This is the place where we get to speak with additive manufacturing industry pioneers, AM users, and adopters in some of the most advanced areas of technology and manufacturing. For those who don't know me, I am Davide Scher, co-founder of 3DBPM, journalist and market analyst. 3DBPM is a media and market research company that specializes exclusively on the additive manufacturing or AM industry. We publish 3D Printing Media Network, one of the leading news and editorial portals trusted by AM professionals all over the world. We also conduct extensive market research and publish reports on all the core segments and all the key verticals of additive manufacturing, from energy to aerospace and space industry applications. Space is the initial frontier for AM, one of the industrial segments where AM production made the most sense from the very start, and where AM has helped to enable the development and growth of a new, vibrant commercial space industry. Today, we get to speak with one of the companies driving this new age of space across many segments. The Satellite Applications Catapult is one of a network of UK technology and innovation companies which aim to drive economic growth through the commercialization of research. The company's aim is to support UK industry by accelerating the growth of satellite applications and to contribute to capturing a 10% share of the global space market, predicted by 2030. Exploiting the innovation potential in the UK industrial and academic communities, SAC is a focal point where small and medium enterprises, large industry and end users can work together with researchers to challenge barriers, explore and develop new ideas and bring these to commercial reality. Our guest for this episode, Mike Curtis-Rouse, is Head of Access for Space for Satellite Application Catapult. In this role, Mike leads a multidisciplinary team of engineers, technologists, and analysts with mission heritage in spacecraft launch and operations, combined with expertise from automotive, manufacturing, and the maritime sector. The ambition is to ensure that the UK sits in the vanguard of this new era, being competitive in technologies including propulsion development and testing, in-orbit servicing and manufacturing, IOSM, devolved operations center, space situational awareness, and solar energy from space. He works with many launch vehicle companies across the world and is heavily involved in the UK's launch and spaceport program. Prior to Catapult, Mike worked for Reaction Engines Ltd, the European Space Agency, Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, and CERN. So hello, Mike, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Davide, thank you very much for the invitation. Great to be with you, and I'm sorry that my company's name is such a mouthful.
Thank you, yes, but we will manage, and it does get the point across. So can you help us understand what exactly is the Satellite Applications Catapult?
Sure, so let's just clarify. So we're a Satellite Applications Catapult, and that doesn't, as some people think, involve catapulting spacecraft into space. We certainly like to catapult innovation, but we don't actually catapult anything. That's something that people sometimes ask us. So what are we? Well, we're a research technology organization, and the easiest way to describe that is probably to ask people, have you ever heard of something like Fraunhofer, the German research organization, because we're modeled on a very similar construct. So we're an organization which we're partially funded by the government in the UK. We're partially funded by the commercial research and consultancy we do ourselves and the grants that we secure for ourselves. We're not a big organization. We're about 200 people in total over several sites in the UK. And we focus on getting innovation from the low technology readiness levels to the higher technology readiness levels. So that's looking at explicitly technology based around space. So while it says satellite applications in the title, it's not just about satellites and their applications. It's about spacecraft. It's about launch. It's about, as you mentioned, in-space power, in-space nuclear, solar power from space, in-orbit servicing and manufacturing, and a whole variety of other areas. But realistically, we're here to take technology from a low level, accelerate it to a higher level, and help companies who are looking to exploit that capability be successful, create jobs, benefit the economy, grow themselves, and hopefully do space bigger and better.
That's fantastic. And honestly, we love everything about space, and we love how additive is part of this ongoing revolution of the space industry. So can you help us understand how you help, exactly how you assist these companies, and how are you driving this this space market revolution, and how exactly the market is changing in your opinion?
Yeah, of course. So right now the market is changing. Answer is slightly back to front. So the market's changing phenomenally rapidly, and actually, additive has been one of those technologies which has really helped the space industry, particularly the launch industry, get ahead of many other sectors and kind of improve on that lack of progress we saw between about 1980 and 2000. Yeah. The space shuttle was operational, the space station was beginning to be built. And then between 2000 and 2010, we started to see the space station get bigger. The space shuttle eventually got retired in 2011, but we saw more launch capabilities being developed. But suddenly between 2011 and 2022, we've seen this huge spurt of growth in terms of giant constellations of satellites, hundreds of people trying to build launch vehicles, new applications for data, new applications for products which are beginning to be made in space to be used on Earth, and to an extent beginning to be made in space to be used in space. So the whole marketplace is fundamentally changing at a hugely fast pace. So how do we help commercial space companies? Well, realistically, we're there to look at their technology and help them develop better solutions. Sometimes they already have a solution, and we're here to help provide them with access to capabilities to allow them to build that solution, engineer that solution, and make it better. Sometimes they just have an idea, and we work with them commercially to help build their business model. So we approach it from effectively two directions. Both are fundamentally intertwined, but one direction is about a business model. Is it the right business? Are you going after the right market share? Do you understand the constraints? Do you understand the risks of intellectual property? Do you understand the risks of export control, etc.? And on the other side is the technology. Is your product going to work in space? Is your launch vehicle actually going to get into space in the first place? We see numerous launch vehicles which try really hard, but don't quite make it. Will your satellite function in space? Can you scale up the manufacturing of your satellite? And so on. So we work with them from a business perspective to make sure their business fit, and we work with them from a technology readiness level to make sure that they are ready to deploy their technology, use their technology, and hopefully profit from their technology.
We find that is all super exciting. I mean, these are great applications, great products we follow everything that's happening. But of course, at 3DBPM and in our media, we're particularly interested in understanding exactly how additive manufacturing is helping the satellite industry evolve. Can you help us, maybe identify some of the ways that additive plays a role?
Absolutely. So additive's really a great match fit for the space industry, because we know that additive manufacturing is often cited as the solution for the world to make just about everything. And those of us who are involved in additive manufacturing often kind of like bow our heads and go, please, let's just be realistic about what we can use additive for. We can't make everything, and particularly in extremely high volumes. In the space industry, where we're talking volumes of 1 to 10, or occasionally 1 to 100, or 1 to 1,000, additive is a great fit because it allows us to deliver the effectively bespoke components, or slightly effectively components which are almost unique, but not quite, but in a volume which allows us to be giving us the flexibility to design something in low volumes, but manufacturing in medium volumes, and have the ability to scale at a later date. And there are so few technologies which you can actually do that with. Certainly from a subtractive perspective, you simply, if you take something like injection molding and say, actually, I only want 10 to 15 effectively parts, the cost model just simply doesn't add up.
Sure.
So additive is a really good fit for those companies who need a low volume of part. They need to be able to control the shape, the topology, the function to an extent, the material, without necessarily investing in very high value, effectively mass production technologies. But at the same time, we also know that rapid prototyping and prototyping itself has actually not quite halted, but we've moved to the point with the ability to access additive in a whole variety of different materials to be able to build our part almost right first time.
Sure.
And again, the space industry is hugely cost conscious, even though it's hugely performance conscious. So if you can tie cost conscious with performance conscious, and you can find a halfway house, that's a pretty good place to be. So realistically, from our perspective, we see additive as one of the key tools for the space industry, and especially for launch vehicles and for satellites.
That really helps us understand. And like specifically in the case of the satellite applications catapult, what research do you conduct that involves additive manufacturing? I know you mentioned before all the different types of research that you conduct. Which ones are particularly relevant for AM?
So for AM, we focus in a couple of specific areas, and I suppose they're best probably described as sitting within the in-orbit servicing and manufacturing area. And that includes a combination of robotics, materials, propulsion, and operations. Each of these areas have effectively an overlap where additive plays a role. For robotics, we're looking at additive manufacturing, which allows us to make new types of interface to allow spacecraft to join up together, to dock, to refuel, to service, and to repair in space. And additive gives us the ability to come up with some really custom-based interfaces in a variety of materials, metal, polymers, ceramics, etc.
Sure.
So we have a key interest in that. Naturally, propulsion is a really good fit for additive, and a lot of the work we're engaged with covers both chemical propulsion, so that's effectively huge levels of thrust, which allow you to get, well, certainly escape the Earth's gravitational well, and indeed other planets and other satellites like the moon, for example, but also to do very energetic maneuvers in space. So if you want to avoid something in space debris, as most people are aware, is increasingly becoming an issue.
Sure.
So to get out of the way of something coming towards you at 17,000 miles an hour, you need to move pretty fast. The flip side to that is electric propulsion. Again, that's an area where, again, an additive is great for, because it allows us to build very complex single material devices in medium to high volumes with a very high degree of fidelity. And electrical propulsion comes in a whole range of flavors, where chemical, you're basically talking a monopropellant or bipropellant. With electric propulsion, you can use all sorts of things, everything from water being electrolyzed across to aluminium powder. So you can do a lot with it, but you still need to go back to the basic principles of, if I want to build something in medium volumes to low volumes with complex internal geometries, and I want to have absolute control of the material so the part functions when I test it on Earth, and it absolutely functions first time, every time when I test it in space. So that's where additive really plays a big role for us around the propulsion area. It touches a whole variety of things though as well. And we have interests in everything from looking at emerging lunar technologies to the use of nuclear power in space. Not necessarily nuclear power for propulsion, but nuclear power to power big construction efforts that we expect to start taking place within the next 5 to 10 years in space to build even bigger structures in space.
Wow, that's amazing. And so let's go back down to Earth 1 second. And I wanted to understand, you mentioned prototypes and tools and other services. What is it that you think additive is best for right now? Is it mostly prototypes, tools, or even some, you know, final parts? I mean, is that your main focus for your use of additive, or the use of additive manufacturing that you recommend to also your clients?
Sure. So for me, additive is probably the best way of getting a small business, a new business, from initial concept to actually demonstrating product to their investors and their future investors. You can almost skip the rapid prototyping step and say, look, if we've got a design which we can test out on paper, we've done the modeling of it, for example, we know how it's going to perform, we can jump straight to the final product.
Cool.
Recognizing there will be subsequent iterations, no doubt.
Sure.
But we can jump straight to the final product, and we can validate that fast, and then we can show our investors, we can show our future partners, etc., that we have this capability. And more importantly, we can show our customers as well that this is what we're doing, and it's not, this is a model and we'll be ready in 5 years. This
sure.
is the actual part, because we've tested it. We've almost, and this is where the digitization of the world is increasingly becoming important. We're beginning to create these digital twins of parts that we have such a high fidelity of the manufacturing spec. We've done the finite element analysis. we've generated it as a CAD model, we've validated the materials via material databases, and now we're building the part, because additive gives us that ability to, and I wouldn't say it's always a good idea, but to skip several steps.
Sure.
We can get straight to the end part and say, here it is, this is how it's going to work, this is how it's going to integrate. And more importantly, we can show that to customers, and it might be business to business, or it might be business to direct end user. But either way, being able to do that faster reduces your commercial risk, and of course it reduces your technical risk as well. So that's why I see additive as an absolutely key ingredient to doing accelerated manufacture, accelerated development, and hopefully, if your company and your organization is successful, accelerated business.
I love the idea of using additive to skip the prototyping part. Obviously, that's simplifying it, but I love that concept. What about, so one of the machines that you use is the Metal Fab 1 from Additive Industries. This is a particularly a machine that was created for production. Why did you select this particular technology, and what advantages does it offer you over other technologies?
So the Additive Industries Metal Fab 1 system is fabulous. I've known Additive Industries for probably really more or less since they got off the ground in the first place. And what I really like about the Metal Fab 1 system is that basically it's scaled. So I've been talking about and touching on about accelerated manufacture, accelerated production, and accelerated commercialization. One of the issues though with many metal additive laser powder bed systems and other varieties is that the systems are still to an extent designed for research and development. They're still designed for early stage validation and manufacturing. The Metal Fab 1 turns the system on, basically on its head. It says, outright, we're going to build stuff, and we're going to build stuff now. And when you want to build more stuff, add more bits. So when you look at effectively large-scale automation of factories and a similar capability, if you want to basically build effectively multiple pieces, effectively multiple machinings, you buy multiple CNC machines. If you want to do additive, you can buy multiple AM machines. The challenge comes is that every AM machine tends to have its own subtle variance.
Sure.
The Metal Fab 1 system takes away that variance factor because it shares the same optics and the same delivery system, the same powder handling system, etc. So you can basically, as we have, we're running Inconel 718, you can have one build volume building parts of rocket engines, in our case usually, in 718, and then we can have another build chamber building parts, so for example, antennas for satellites in the next build chamber, building parts in TI-64. And then we could potentially, though I wouldn't necessarily go in that direction, you could potentially then have a third chamber, which you might use a reduced build volume for experimenting with new types of tantalum and niobium alloys. So from my perspective, it's a great way of having a reasonably consistent floor space, reasonably consistent technology running all the way through, but a really cost-effective way of doing industrialization of additive. And we talk about industrialization of additive on a regular basis, but I'm not really convinced anyone's there yet. And the Metal Fab 1 system is probably the best example of a system which allows you to go from, I want to build one thing, to I want to build 100, or I want to build 1,000. And it allows your technology to scale with your effectively growth of your product or your innovation at the same time.
Honestly, that's also kind of our understanding. And we also saw that really the company start with this vision, and it's really interesting to see, you know, to see that it's actually a few years now into the project, it's more and more coming to closer to what they had initially envisioned. So getting back to what you were saying about the in-orbit servicing and manufacturing, the center and the research you do on this, can you help us understand how this will evolve?
Sure. So I mean, in-orbit servicing and manufacturing, probably, I mean, there's a lot of exciting areas, and I'm fortunate to be in a role where I can see a lot of exciting innovation and capabilities. But IOSM, as we call it, in-orbit servicing and manufacturing, it actually does have a few other letters in there, but for the sake of, I think, my collective sanity and my team sanity, we tend to leave them out. But it includes things in there like inspection, assembly, repair, etc., and so on. But simply, IOSM is the ability to build and make things in space. And we've actually been doing it for a while already, to an extent, at a much more basic level. So the International Space Station was assembled from a kit of parts, a very big kit of parts, but nonetheless, it still was a kit of parts, and it's actually still being put together. The Hubble Space Telescope was deployed, and then subsequently, due to an aberration with one of the mirrors, a servicing mission had to go and effectively repair it in situ. And we've seen a variety of other technologies of things being effectively made at a very nascent level on the space station. Northrop Grumman have done a couple of mission extension vehicle orbit raises of spacecraft where they've taken a satellite and they've raised the orbit of the satellite so it can be functional again. So there's a lot of effectively nascent capability. But from our perspective, what does this mean? Well, this is basically about, okay, we can now get into space, and getting into space is about halfway of the journey. It's hard, but various organizations are making it seem easier. It's still hard, but it's getting easier. Sure. It's getting less risky. So, okay, that's the half the hard bit over. The next half of the hard bit, if you think about it, is building things in space. So why are satellites cube-shaped? Well, that's because they have to sit on the top of rockets, and that's how we launch them. But in reality, does a satellite actually need to be a cuboid? Well, the answer is probably not. If we built it in space, we'd probably build it in a very different way, and it would probably last longer, it perform better, and it almost certainly would be more cost-effective. So a large part of this at IOSM is let's take things in space, let's build them in space using materials in space, let's build them to be better, more cost-effective, last longer, and when they finally effectively need to be replaced, we can remove them from space without leaving them there to basically clutter up orbits. The other aspect to it, though, is, of course, not just making things in space to use in space, it's making things in space to use on Earth. So there's a whole variety of different products and services of which we can do in space, which will have a benefit to the UK and the global and the effectively European economies. So we're looking at manufacturing everything from certain types of semiconductor to certain types of alloy to potentially replacement organs to fiber optic material. All of these can be made in space, and they can be made in space to a far higher fidelity and give you far better performance, and in some cases, far better cost than things we can make on Earth.
Wow. And two things come to mind. One is that it's probably a lot easier to bring them back to Earth from space than to bring them from Earth to space in terms of costs. And the other thing is that, additive was initially envisioned and is still envisioned as a distributed manufacturing technology. And I guess it doesn't get more distributed as in space manufacturing. Back to what you were saying about the benefits to the UK economy and in general, everything that's happening in the UK towards the space industry. Is the UK a big hub? And if so, why is the UK such a big hub for space technologies?
It's a good question, and it's one I ask myself fairly frequently, because the UK doesn't actually have that big of a track record of doing things in space. We don't have a space station. We have no, at least at this stage, no notional launch capability. We have one astronaut, and we certainly haven't built many of the big structures that other nations like Germany, France, Russia, China, and the US built in space. So why are we a hub for space technologies? Well, I think it partly stems to the fact that the UK is extremely good at innovation. We have a very good comprehension of manufacturing materials. And when you bring innovation into that as well, and a very robust and, frankly, in many cases, a very generous government grant funding framework, then you end up with effectively all the kind of the key ingredients to do space-based innovation fast. We've got the UK Space Hub, and certainly my organization has its headquarters at Harwell in South Oxfordshire in the United Kingdom. That's basically the more or less the UK Space Hub. And that's only grown in the last decade or so, but now we have about 160, 170 companies representing really the length and breadth of space across the world. Some of them are actually based there. Many of them just have regional offices there. But fundamentally what you get is you get this huge melting pot of innovation and ideas and capability and interactions. And you know, it's an observation I make that the best innovation I usually see is going on in the Costa coffee shop in our building, where we get hundreds if not thousands of companies coming together over a course of a year, talking about innovation, talking about problems, and talking about opportunity. So you don't necessarily need the ability to build things in space or launch your own rockets or put humans on Mars, but you certainly do need to have a good place where people can get together and talk about opportunity. Sure. And when they find opportunity, they will often turn that opportunity into product, and that's where you get innovation from.
Absolutely. And do you think, we covered this a little bit in the beginning, but do you think AM has played a key part in enabling this development of the commercial space industry in the UK and also generally?
Yeah, I do. Additive has been one of those technologies that the UK has embraced up to a fairly high level. But it's been one of those technologies which has also allowed an awful lot of UK companies to suddenly get to the next stage faster. And I think in the past, without rapid prototyping, which is really where additive came from, if you didn't have that ability to prove out your design, to validate something fast, and most importantly, be able to show your investor you were making progress, I think many of these companies just simply wouldn't have got off the ground. And I mean that literally in some cases for those companies who are looking at propulsion systems or rocket engines. If you can't show your investors really fast progress, then the chances of you getting consistent investment, or more importantly, more investment, is going to be pretty slim. So additive has been a really, really key process to allow companies to actually prove that their product, their service, their innovation can get to the next level and can get there fast, because it's all about time. Time is the one thing that we can't make. And if you run out of time, you usually run out of money.
Sure, that's so true. And when talking about your clients, but also your view of the industry in general, do you think that every company, every space company that could benefit from it is using AM or is considering using AM? Or are we still at a point where many companies have not yet considered it, or don't find it suitable for what they do?
So I think, in a way, that is a very interesting question, because I find there's an awful lot of companies who are using additive and they probably shouldn't use additive. So
sure.
10 years ago, we had about 12 companies building rocket engines and launch vehicles. Today, mm-hmm. we have more than 300 globally aspiring to do the same. And almost all of them, without exception, all are using additive manufacturing because they see it as a magical technology which allows them to go from zero to hero really fast. Now, some of these companies really get it, and they've got some fantastic processes in there. They're working with complex materials like oxygen-free copper and others, and they're really doing some phenomenal innovation. We've got an awful lot of companies who are just simply going to probably blow themselves up, because they don't really understand additive, and they've used an Ultimaker or something for a year at university, and they now think all they need to do is metal additive is dead simple, and they're just going to do the same. So I see the use of additive as certainly it's growing in utilization by many companies. Are the right companies using it for the right products? Absolutely not. But there were plenty of companies out there at the same time who need to start using it. And the fact they aren't using it, or the fact that they aren't even aware of it in some cases, is a great opportunity for those organizations out there who want to get new companies into using additive, those organizations who are service bureaus or consultants in additive, or frankly, doing podcasts. Because additive, as you know, as I know, is a hugely enabling capability. And if you can use it in the right way, not only can you reduce your cost footprint, but you can increase your innovation capability massively. And actually, at the same time, in many respects, it's a far more sustainable process as well. So it's good for you, it's good for your company, it's good for your customer, and I hope to an extent it's good for the planet.
Absolutely. Wow, that's really, really fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time for being with us today. And we will, publish this interview in our upcoming ebook on aerospace additive manufacturing, together with lots of other content. So keep following us, and we will see you all next time. Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us.
Thank you very much.